Activists are condemning law enforcement for their handling of the death of 16-year-old Michaela Miller in Hopkinton 2 weeks ago. Local police initially suspected the death was a suicide, but her family and community say there are unanswered questions, particularly because Miller, who was Black, was apparently involved in a fight with a group of white and Latinx teenagers hours before she died. WBUR senior reporter Allie Jar Manning is following the story and joins us now. Thanks for joining us, Allie.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's start. We're going to break this down, and we're going to start with what law enforcement officials are saying. What do they say they know about Michaela Miller's death so far?
Sure. So in short, they say the investigation is not over, and they don't know how Michaela died. That decision is left to the state medical examiner. The office will rule on the cause and manner of death, you know, suicide, homicide, an accident, something else. But here's what DA Marion Ryan told reporters yesterday. That Michaela was in the common area of her apartment complex on Saturday evening, April 17th, when five teenagers showed up. There was three girls and two boys. Michaela had a romantic relationship with one of the girls. And there was a physical altercation between a girl, a boy, and Michaela, and the teenagers left. And then Michaela's mom called Hopkinton police that night, and they responded and saw Michaela had a cut lip, and there was damage at the common area, looking like there had been a fight. And the cops that night talked to some of the teenagers involved. Michaela's mom went to bed that night. And between 9 and 10, Michaela's phone showed that she walked about 1,300 steps about to where her body was found. And a jogger the next morning reported her death to police. All five of the teenagers involved in the altercation earlier in the night have been accounted for. And Ryan says they were not near Michaela during those hours. And Ryan says nothing so far indicates that Michaela was targeted because she's Black or LGBT.
A painful situation. So that's what law enforcement is saying. What is her family saying?
Yeah, her mother tells the Boston Globe that police dismissed her daughter's death as a suicide and that the family has lots of unanswered questions about what happened. She told the Globe that if the races were reversed and a group of Black kids attacked a white girl who later died, this would be treated very differently. And I should say we've tried to get in touch with Michaela's mother, but haven't been able to reach her yet. DA Ryan yesterday acknowledged the family's frustration, and she insisted there's nothing about Michaela's identity that is leading them to slow walk the investigation. And she acknowledges that, you know, there's nothing that's going to bring Michaela back, and she knows that nothing really of what she said yesterday is going to bring much comfort to the family.
What we can do and what we really owe her is an accurate and fulsome accounting of what happened and what led to her death.
All right, so Allie, now let's step back for a second, because a chorus of outrage has intensified from the community. So explain what it is about this case that has brought that ire, that anger out.
Yeah, so Michaela has been dead for more than 2 weeks, but it was only this past weekend when community activists like Monica Cannon Grant and others started posting about Michaela's death on Twitter and elsewhere that the case really got a lot of attention. And people are alleging a cover-up, or at the very least, that the investigation hasn't been as thorough as it should be. They're saying Michaela's murdered. Some people are saying she was lynched. And, you know, there are many high-profile people who have taken up the cause, especially in the last 24 hours. Some people calling for an independent investigation. That includes Cannon Grant, Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley, author and anti-racist activist Ibram Kendi, and even Somerville Mayor Joe Curtone.
All right, so what happens next? Next steps for both sides, the advocates and law enforcement.
Yeah, so tomorrow there is a vigil planned at the starting line of the Boston Marathon in Hopkinton, and that's being organized by Cannon Grant and Tito Jackson. And we're waiting on a ruling from the medical examiner. Ryan has said when the investigation is finished, she's going to release as many of the records tied to the case as she legally can.
All right. I want to touch on another major story before we let you go about Sean Ellis. Yesterday, a judge overturned the final charge against Ellis, who spent more than 20 years in prison for the 1993 killing of a Boston police detective. Tell us the history of the case and what got us here.
Yeah, this has gone on for a long time, so bear with me as we work through this. But Sean Ellis was 21 years old when he was convicted of killing a Boston police detective, John Mulligan, as the officer slept in his car on a paid detail. And Ellis was sentenced to life in prison for that killing. And he stayed there until 2015. And that's when a judge said, justice may not have been done in this case because of corruption by Boston police detectives. Mulligan and three other detectives, the same detectives who investigated Mulligan's murder, were accused of ripping off drug dealers. Two of those detectives later pleaded guilty to those crimes. So the judge in 2015 overturns the murder conviction against Ellis. And 3 years later, the then Suffolk County DA, John Pappas, says there's not enough evidence to retry Ellis. So the murder case is over at that point. But Ellis still had a remaining gun possession conviction on his record. He filed a motion for a new trial. And in a really unusual step, the new Suffolk County DA, Rachel Rollins, endorsed his motion, and she said the whole case was tainted by significant and egregious police corruption and prosecutorial misconduct. So that brings us to yesterday. A judge overturned that conviction on the final gun charge, and just today, Rollins formally dropped the charge.
So you used the term unusual a moment ago about Rollins' actions. Put it in context, her decision to drop the other charge, etc.
Yeah, it's a big deal. You know, so back in 2018, when her predecessor, John Pappas, decided not to try Ellis a fourth time, he insisted there was no evidence pointing to any other suspect other than Ellis and the other man who was convicted along with him. And the message there was, Ellis is the guy who did it. We just don't have the evidence we need for a new trial. He said at the time that the gun charge would remain, quote, undisturbed. And this is Rollins saying justice wasn't done in this case because of some pretty heinous corruption by Boston police.
So what happens now?
So Rollins has said she's looking into other cases investigated by the corrupt detectives at the center of this case. And that's something Ellis's longtime attorney, Rosemary Scapiccio, is really happy about, because she says Sean Ellis is not an isolated case.
I'm hopeful that if that investigation truly goes forward, that other people who are now sitting in a jail cell convicted of crimes they didn't commit will have the opportunity to prove their innocence and be free.
And Sean Ellis, for the first time in 30 years, is no longer a convicted felon today. He has a clean slate.
All right. That is WBUR senior reporter Allie Jarmanning. Allie, thanks.
Thank you.